Hi there, everyone, and welcome to this first season of Conservation Storytelling. My name is Matt, and I will be your host for this show. It's great to have you here, and I look forward to sharing these conversations with you. Welcome to the very first season of the Conservation Storytelling Podcast. This series of podcasts will be focusing on the way that COVID-19 has affected the world of conservation in Africa. And I think between all of us, there's no denying that the way business is treated as usual is going to change completely. And that means that conservation is no exception. This week's guests are Ed Sir and Claire Lewis from the Frankfurt Zoological Society. Ed is the country director and project leader for Zambia and the North Luangwa Conservation Program, whilst Claire is the technical advisor to the North Luangwa Conservation Program. Last year, we spent some time working on a few film and photography assignments with them up in the North Park, and we were able to witness the sheer scale that they're supporting as a project. With the only black rhino reintroduced in Zambia residing in the park, the task at hand is a mammoth one, but the achievements have been nothing short of phenomenal. In this episode, both Ed and Claire share the impact that COVID-19 is already having on donor support at a project level and where they foresee the real issues coming in the near future. Here is my conversation with Ed and Claire.
Ed and Claire, thanks so much for joining me and welcome to this new web series on COVID and conservation. How are you guys?
We're good, thank you. Yeah, and you guys?
Not too bad, thanks. We're managing as best as we can here in Zim, currently under lockdown. So been confined to these walls for a while now, getting quite used to our own company. So guys, would you mind just giving us and the viewers and listeners a quick introduction to yourselves, who you are and what are your roles within the organization? So maybe Claire, let's start with you.
So my name's Claire Lewis. I'm the project manager for the North Luangwa Conservation Program, which means basically I just try and keep the wheels turning. I spend quite a lot of my time working on funding proposals and donor administration and making sure that there's a coordinated funding strategy as well as activity planning going forward so that we can achieve everything we want to do in the ecosystem, whether that's education or law enforcement or community programs and initiatives or just general day-to-day, making sure everyone's got paper clips and staples. So yeah, it's all evolving, sort of jack of all trades, master of few, but hopefully, yeah, keep things on the road.
Cool, and I'm Ed Sayer, so I'm the director of FZS, or Frankfurt Zoological Society Zambia, which is predominantly my role is here in the North Luangwa Conservation Program, but also provide some oversight and input to the new project we started on in Nsumbu on Lake Tanganyika. But my day-to-day work really here, probably primarily with all of the project staff and the REPU team, which is the Rhino and Elephant Protection Unit, which is centered around the Black Rhino project, as well as the elephant population in the park and beyond in the wider North Luangwa ecosystem, which is now 22,000 square kilometers, so quite a large area with nigh on 400 scouts, as well as our ever-increasing workshop and logistics department. So that kind of keeps us all busy from dawn till dusk.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we were fortunate enough to come spend a bit of time with you guys last year, and it's a massive operation you got running there and a huge area to cover.
Yeah, no, it is vast. I mean, especially when you start comparing it to other areas. I mean, it's the same size as Wales in UK or the same size as some of the states in the US. It is vast. And obviously, we have differing levels of impact in different parts. Obviously, a much higher impact and role within the park and the core area. But obviously, you know, I think with these landscapes and the success of these landscapes is based on the much wider areas, which is generally the community areas, and therefore there's a huge focus in the last few years has been into the wider landscape, because it's that wider landscape that makes makes the area function and brings people on board, and then which buys the sustainability for the area, you know, in terms of the ownership and feeling empowered to see the vision through for the landscape. And that comes from the people. So we've had to expand into the much wider area, but it is a big area, and the infrastructural kind of costs to get around permanently are massive.
So you've got seven key focus areas in the project. I know, Claire, you started mentioning law enforcement and the education program. And before it, maybe you can elaborate a bit on the community side. Maybe you can just run us a little bit through each of the focus areas and what it really takes to get these areas functional.
Yeah, I think probably the sort of core, right at the center of it, if everything had to be stripped away and you could stick to just one, it would be trying to maintain the security and the integrity of the national park, which essentially comes down to logistics and enforcement. So Zambia has a quite strong Wildlife Act. Its enactment isn't necessarily always the strongest, but the actual act itself is quite robust. And there is a National Parks Department that we're very fortunate here in North Rwanda. We have a very good, compared to other areas, complement of manpower, which means that we can put in place trolling, anti-poaching effectively. And as a national park with the big five, so we have black rhinos, which is essentially the sort of cherry on the cake, you really do have to keep that going at kind of all costs. And then there's all the logistics that go around that. So that's vehicles and the workshop and roads and infrastructure and the plane and all the stuff that goes around enforcement, whether that's training and equipment and rations and uniforms and everything else. So I think that's probably our sort of absolute basic core. But then along with that, one has to keep everything else going as well. You can't just do things in isolation. And so you need to be able to appeal to the wider communities. And that involves the game management areas around the ecosystem, which involves people. And to be, to all intents and purposes, wildlife can just get on with its own thing. It doesn't really need us at all. It's people that need support and management and help and governance and alternative livelihood options. So yeah, it's trying to support the people that live in this landscape with wider opportunities. Their agriculture is very, very marginal in these areas. So a wildlife resource base for economic purpose is really, in many cases, the only natural resource upon which livelihoods can be based. So being able to empower people to utilize that in a sustainable, beneficial, and fair way is sort of the crux of quite a lot of what we do, whether that's through community initiatives or education and awareness. And the enforcement goes along with that as well, you know, making people aware of what's right and what's wrong and what's possible and what is legal and what's illegal. And then trying to help people work towards a better and more sustainable future that's in harmony with the ecosystem. And that cross-cuts pretty much everything, from policy to, you know, really basic small scale and even larger scale initiatives that we try to implement, and right across through to family planning and awareness around that and female health and education. And so yeah, it goes well beyond just anti-poaching.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty good background, and I guess what would be useful as well is maybe to look at the last 30 or 34 years now history of the project in the North Rwanda, which initially had a real focus on law enforcement. The area was under siege, and the elephant population was down to, you know, we believe, around about 500 or so. It was pretty much a free fall in the area, and the wildlife numbers in the care management areas, community areas were very much in decline, as well as in the park. And so it took a huge amount of law enforcement to get that back on track. But what's really made that work is the kind of, is the partnership, and partnership based on trust. Yeah. And that's a three-way partnership here. And I think I'm hoping, and we believe, you know, if we've got any chance of getting through the kind of next 12 months in terms of, you know, the hurdles that are thrown our way, it's going to be based on that partnership. And that partnership is between the community, the North Triangle community, the project, which is ourselves, Frankfurt Zoological Society, and the government. So you put those three together, share the burdens, share the success, and get on a joint vision on the same track, whether it's to do with the community work, the governance work within the community resource boards, whether it's to do with health, as Claire was mentioning, or agriculture, as well as wildlife, as well as decision making, as well as planning, then as well as mitigation measures to problems, and to buying into that kind of that same vision, I think is what has held us in good stead the last few years, and certainly I think has contributed massively to the very low levels of poaching, both, you know, elephant poaching down to zero in 2018 and very low 2019, and again very low so far this year. I think things will change, and equally obviously with the rhino population not having suffered any poaching as of yet. And I think that's, you know, it's not down to any one thing. That's down to all three partners and being open, honest with each other, and working together through ups and downs. And there's always ups and downs. And I think we've obviously got a down coming up. If that makes sense. We've got a tricky period coming up, shall I say. And I think we're going to really rely upon each other again to see ourselves through that. And I think in Zambia as well, obviously the virus and the impact on lives and people's health is massive and has potential to be massive. But unfortunately, I think what's going to be bigger is economic impact. And that economic impact is going to be much longer lasting. And I think will definitely spread into 2021 at least. Because people here are already on a poverty line in many areas. And, you know, this dip, I think, you know, with this loss of employment through, from our perspective, from tourism, both hunting and photographic, is significant. But then the revenue from that, from those activities, both into the game management areas, into the communities, and to the parks and parks department and government, is going to be massive. And how then those basic costs, the salaries of scouts, salaries of the CRB personnel and teachers and scholarships and classroom, school, clinic, road projects they've got going on, disappear, and the subsequent kind of the knock-on effects of that are yet to be seen. But I think we can be pretty sure that there's obviously it's going to have an impact, and you know, with those benefits being lost, then, you know, the justification for conservation in some of these households on the breadline, that's a difficult argument to have. And so yeah, I think we've got to really make sure that we're supporting everybody through that process over the next 12 months, because, you know, I think times will be tough. We're lucky here, I think, in many respects. Our key donors that we brought in are from different kind of backgrounds, so bilateral as well as philanthropic. And at the moment, they're all staying strong and committed to the grants for this year and next year, which is very positive. So we are going to be able to still function. There will be other costs that come on board that we're not yet aware of. But I think the biggest risk is going to be probably in 6 months' time, when salaries are not able to be paid from the community resource boards to all of their staff. And equally, is that I believe there's potential for government revenue to diminish, and potentially scout wages not being on time. And the impact there could be massive. So anyway, that's a quick synopsis from me.
Thanks so much. I don't need to carry on. Yeah, clear. Sorry.
Yeah, everything that Ed has said is true and correct. But I think actually going back to the partnership, this can also be seen as an opportunity now that there will be economic hardship and there will be job losses. But if we can keep the partnership strong with, and that includes, I'm going to put a fourth partner into that as well, and that includes our donors and our supporters. if we can keep that the strength within that partnership, then we have an opportunity to maintain this going forward. We have the opportunity to show again and embed again with the communities that conservation is an economic, has an economic importance, and is actually going to be one of the few players in this whole field that can keep jobs. We haven't laid off anybody yet, and we hope that we don't have to. We may have to reduce hours, we may have to slow down a little bit on some of the work that we plan to do because we just can't have large gatherings, we can't necessarily go out into communities and carry on quite in the way we need to, but we're looking very much at how we can make all of this, all of our money and all of our resources that we have in place now, stretch for as long as possible to keep people in jobs. And I think potentially at the end of this, some of the only jobs that will be in this area will be through the project, through national parks, and through the community initiatives that we've put in place. And hopefully that will really strengthen in the minds of the people that live in this landscape that conservation can be really important, and actually seeing them through this hard time whilst so many other things have fallen by the wayside and taken away their economic independence. So yeah, I think there's a lot of unknowns at the moment and a lot of parts that we're not quite sure how it's going to pan out, but I think this could actually be a real opportunity. And we have had quite a few donors be in contact with us now and being very, very understanding and very flexible on their approach in saying, okay, we agreed in the proposals and we agreed in your budgets that you would be doing X, Y, and Z. We understand that may not be potentially possible within the time frame of the grant. Do you need more time? Do you need to redirect these resources? And there's been a real response to that. We've been fielding a lot of queries and a lot of questions on what we're doing and how we're doing things, but I think everybody, because it's global, everyone's in the same boat and everyone's being affected and having to change their work plans and their strategies and their thinking. So we've just been able to be encompassed within that as well, and donors have realized that we're in just as much strife as everybody else and are being very flexible. So that's huge. At the same time, we've also had donors saying that their capital base is very much reducing. Lots of foundations and trusts have their capital held up in stocks and shares and things that depend on the strong stock market. And as that's crashed across the world, people have tightened their belts extremely quickly. So it's a lot of juggling a lot of things at the moment, as well as trying to keep everyone safe and making sure that we've got enough policies and protocols in place that we can be as strict as we can be in this very open and very sort of fluid workspace. It's all over the place, but I guess we're not unique in that.
In terms of what the kind of measures and mitigation measures we're putting in place now in the short term, because I think as I alluded to at the beginning, we haven't yet really been hit by a huge number of people being contracting the virus in the area yet. But obviously as it spreads around the country, that'll change. So we've kind of been planning how, you know, worst case scenarios with the Rhino Elephant Protection Unit, and how they patrol and how they enforce the area, how we're going to utilize the aircraft in combination with reduced manpower, how the investigations and intelligence units work, how we keep in regular communication with the communities and the community leadership. But equally, obviously, our workshop, which is key to making everything function. So already looking at shifts there and how we'll split that up and potentially doing some of the services not here in our main workshop, but actually getting out to some of the smaller, to the villages and to the towns and getting it done there and just changing how we operate. We've also now distributed sanitization equipment across all 28 of the scout camps, at the control room base, all of our staff bases, and obviously also educating people about how this virus is contracted, how to make yourself safe and how to work in a safe environment. And that's taken some doing as well, getting that around, because it's quite an alien thing to appreciate. And it's very unlike some of the other viruses that we have in that regard, in terms of its transmission rate. And we've just ordered 500 masks. So, you know, there's masks now for all of the project and DMBW and community staff, which will be issued at the end of the week. So just in preparation. It'd be interesting, I think, if we speak again another month or 2 months, once presumably the virus has come through, and to see what impact it actually had, and then how we've evolved our strategy around that. Because I think it's really about being flexible and dynamic and just kind of going with the flow to a certain extent, but then trying to stick by our kind of core needs and addressing them whilst that happens.
As soon as this kicked off, we put in place an incident response task team, which was across the country for Frankfurt, involving the Lusaka office here and Sumbu Tanganyika Conservation Project. And then we established lines of communication. We've established a disease outbreak contingency plan with various stages and what needs to happen within each stage, as well as all the information and education that's gone around that. So what I think has been really interesting in this is being able to be, again, going back to sort of trying to see the positive sides of it and the opportunities here. We've been able to be very flexible. We've been able to be dynamic. We've been able to react and respond very quickly. And I think we're in a very fortunate position to be able to do that. And I'm aware of other organizations that, for example, rely heavily on tourism for their revenue streams. And here we don't. So their revenue has been literally cut off. The tap has turned off. We have a much more broad revenue base or fundraising base. And we've been able to respond and react very quickly to what's going on. And I think that's been really interesting, is that we've never been faced with this before, as have nowhere else in the world. And despite none of it being our fields of expertise, there's enough information out there and there's enough know-how within the organisation that we've pulled this together really quickly. That said, we haven't had any outbreaks here, but we have had people returning. We've had been able to isolate. We've put in place all these sanitation and social distancing or physical distancing protocols. So we've been able to respond really quickly to what's going on. And I think that's real testament to, again, the sort of the strength and the trust and the goodwill and the relationships that we have. We've been immediately able to go to the communities and say, look, we're still here. We can't come out to meet you. We can't hold big gatherings and big training sessions and all the things that we plan, but we're not going away. And because we have this long-term relationship with the communities, with the National Parks and Wildlife Department, that's taken as a given, and it's understood and it's appreciated. So, yeah, I think the goodwill and the trust and the flexibility and the adaptability that we've been able to demonstrate over the last 30 plus years has really come to the fore in this sort of moment of crisis. And we're actually, I feel not, you know, I'm not, it's lots of levels of concern, but I feel like we're in an okay place for where we are and what we're doing. We're okay currently. And that may change, as Ed said, in a month or two's time, but we've done all we can for now. And we just need to keep on with that flexibility and adaptability and ever dynamic approach to things. And hopefully that's one of our strengths.
Absolutely. And I think if anything, that where you are now, this is a good testament to test the ultimate objectives of the project, which I think in many respects is your community ownership around the park and taking responsibility for the park and seeing the value of the project within the park. It's a long road. I'm sure you guys were on the project when the first world recession happened in 2008, 2009. How much of this is different to then, in terms of donor funding, in terms of the donor approach to the situation?
I think back then was a slightly different era in terms of donor funding anyway into conservation projects. I think at that stage, there hadn't been that move by some of those kind of global philanthropists into the wider conservation world to the same degree as you see today. I think Equally, then the costs weren't the same. We weren't fighting a rhino and elephant poaching war that then picked up, 2014, 2015. So the costs were quite different for conserving these areas. So it's slightly different. I think the impact was definitely there then, but on a much smaller scale, because I think conservation wasn't quite so costly then as it has become in the last 10 years with the threat to the, you know, that the threat to these ecosystems has grown significantly in that time period, whether it's to hardwoods, whether it's to encroachment through agriculture, whether it's rhinos, whether it's elephants, it's changed a lot. So I think this is going to be quite different. And I personally believe, I think the bigger impact for us is going to be end of the year and next year on funding. So it's hard to say at this stage. We're good for now, but I think once the money stops coming through from tourism and hunting and we get into next year and I think other areas are going to need support, it's going to be a slightly different perspective.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I think as well, I agree completely that Ed had the times were very different then. They were very different. We had different resources at our availability as well. We didn't have canine unit, for example. We weren't putting as much support in those times into intelligence and investigations work and work outside and around, beyond just the ecosystem level. And very much back then, donors were very much more focused on core law enforcement and a little bit of communities, and that potentially was things like conservation education. The holistic approach to conservation has very much come on board over the last sort of 5 to 8 years. Again, that's come on board with the poaching wave that has gone through for elephants and rhinos. But things, I mean, the illegal wildlife trade was not three words on anybody's lips a decade ago, even though it was there and it was still one of the top five worldwide illegal businesses, and organised crime very much involved in it. It just wasn't on the radar, and now it's pretty much unheard of. You don't write a funding proposal without using the words illegal wildlife trade. Climate change is another one that's creeping into and should always have been part of fundraising proposal language for conservation work. And the language of fundraising has changed, and therefore the donor landscape has changed and what people are willing to fund and what people are able to fund. So yeah, it is a very different project. I think back then we were only supporting operations in an area of about half the size of what we are now. So about half the size of Wales, not the size of Wales. So the costs have changed as well as the what we're trying to fund has changed as well.
Sure. And I think, I don't know, maybe you can give me a better answer on this or a better idea on this. So as the scale of the project has grown and the area has grown, and you've, as you mentioned, incorporated more of a holistic approach into the whole conservation of the North Luangwa ecosystem, would this hold future plans to, say, grow bigger in the protected area? Or is this a good indicator to halt the size of the project and to manage what you've got for future impacts like this?
I don't think we had plans to grow bigger here in the short to medium term. I think obviously we had our plans to expand, to kind of replicate and copy and paste what we've done here in other parts of the country, because we think this formula works, which has been, that's been in some move from 2017 onwards. I think we would still look for a third site. I think I'd still take a step back though from that question and take a look at I think another change that has occurred since 2007, 2008 is this landscape approach, which is what has worked for us here. And the fact that landscape approach is, I believe, what is going to work in most places, incorporating those three partnerships or three organizations, community, private sector, or us, and the government. And giving those areas the resilience, which is what you need in times like this, but equally in times of of other uncertainty or other problems. And I do think that this crisis will show us again how important it is that it's a global responsibility for these landscapes. So, you know, I think the fact that we don't rely upon the area's revenue generation for protecting this landscape, but we rely upon a global responsibility because it's global threats that are against these landscapes, I think is key. And I hope the more that that can be seen around the world and more it's taken on as a global responsibility, and not just Zambia, not just North Luangwa's responsibility to cover their costs, I think the better. And with that in mind, I think that means that there's still opportunity through this and after this to look at more areas where, okay, listen, let us sort out this wider landscape. I'm going back to Claire's point about IWT, because without landscapes, there is no IWT, because those landscapes are what host the wildlife. And that's, for me, I think this is going to remind us all to focus on those landscapes, but now as well, it's not just focus on the law enforcement, it's focus on the ownership and the communities within those landscapes. You know, it's a bit of a contradiction in terms, because this COVID virus has potentially come because of IWT. Whether it is from, whether it's from bats, we're not really yet sure. So obviously that has been the trigger for this, but in terms of the resilience to survive things like this, it's not about IWT, it's about landscapes.
I think that's a very, very pertinent and very strong close to the conversation. I mean, I could talk to you guys for ages about many of your other aspects of the program. I'm not going to keep too much more of your time. You've got a much bigger job than I do. Guys, thank you so much for coming on board and sharing your strategy in this time. And basically, you know, giving us insight into what you think the future of the donor funding world is going to be in your kinds of projects. If anyone listening or watching wants to get in touch or play a part in your projects, where and how can they?
Instagram, we're available on Facebook. We also have the FCDES website where there's a North Luangwa page. Yeah, and all your usual social media accounts, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook.
Guys, once again, thanks so much. And yeah, we'll catch up with you again soon. Good luck up there.
So that was Ed and Claire chatting to us from the North Luangwa Conservation Program up in northern Zambia. Guys, thank you so much for being a part of the conversation and for stopping by. If you enjoyed this episode or made it this far, there are more to come. Please consider supporting these conversations to raise awareness for the effects of COVID-19 is having on conservation in Africa. You can find all the links in the show notes. But until next week, take care, keep safe, and cheers for now.